Hello and welcome to Fair Trade, a Project Zion podcast series where courageous people share the candid stories of their faith journey and what brought them to Community of Christ. I'm your host, Robin Linkhart, and I'm here today with Matt Robertson. Matt, welcome, and thank you so much for being with us today on Project Zion podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Let's take a minute first to just get to know you. So I would like you to introduce yourself to our listeners in a way that you might just briefly introduce yourself to somebody you met for the first time.
Okay, that sounds great. Let's see. I'm living in Salt Lake City, Utah, which is where I grew up. And my wife, Heather and I have been married for 32 years as of the end of June. And we both were raised here, but then we've spent about half-ish of our marriage living outside of Utah and went to mostly we were living in the Pacific Northwest, but have also bounced around to like Boston and Colorado. Raised our kids all mostly in the Pacific Northwest. So I've got three kids who are all grown. We're pretty recent empty nesters and enjoying that a lot. And so our oldest is married. He and his wife live in Florida where they're doing graduate work. We've got a daughter who lives close by who works with autistic kids, and she's autistic herself and is just the most amazing person. Her hobbies are like mathematics and computer programming, and she's a phenomenal person. And then our youngest, our son, lives in Colorado with his fiance. He's a writer and an artist. I could probably talk about, and then Heather, my wife, is, I promise I'll talk about me, but the but Heather is currently doing went back to school to get her bachelor's degree in accounting. She's worked in accounting and been very successful, but was like, just never had, because of different circumstances, just never finished her undergraduate degree and has gone back to school and is doing amazing work there. So we are, as a family, we've moved around a lot. We've kind of been through a lot of things together, both, you know, happy things and things that have been difficult. And so, and all of that has just drawn us into a really tight unit. We really like us, and that's feels beautiful. So, and then I am a teacher. I have been teaching for about 12 years now and came to teaching kind of late in my career. And I always say I came to teaching late and almost didn't get there at all. And I, work at a school that's called the Waterford School in Sandy, Utah. It's a liberal arts school that teach where I the school covers grades pre-K through 12. And the liberal arts focus means that we treat every subject as important, want students to have a very substantial and meaningful experience with all kinds of different areas of study. And my role is I teach music to children who are in grades 3 through 5. So I have about 200 little students who I get to see all of them twice a week in groups of 20 to 24. And we do concerts during the year. We have an amazing time together. I take them very seriously. And we also laugh a lot together. And I just feel really, really fortunate. I will say my worst day teaching is better than my best day in any other job that I've ever had.
I just love that. Well, what a beautiful story already. And is it your son that's in one of your sons in Colorado?
Yes, that's right.
Whereabouts is he located?
Just north of Denver. I always forget the name of the suburb, but it's just but they're just north of there. He and his fiance is a sushi chef
Oh, wow.
and very gifted with that. That's like, you know, we all need to sit down and have a meal that he prepares. But the and then yeah, and they have moved to Colorado about a year ago and are enjoying their time there, although they're now considering thinking about Amsterdam. So we'll see what
Oh,
happens there.
wow. Wow, that's lovely. Well, I ask because I hail from Colorado, for the last, gosh, 46, 47 years of my marriage. And so
Oh, that's great.
I'm always delighted to hear, oh, there's somebody in Colorado, connect to somebody I know. Yay.
Yay, that's great.
Well, thank you for sharing that introduction with us. Now we're going to do a deep dive. So let's just start at the beginning. And what we want is for you to tell us about faith and God and church during your growing up years. So if you could just begin with birth and go up through high school, that would be a great foundation for the rest of your story.
That sounds great. I was born in the Salt Lake area to a what I think of as a devout Latter-day Saint family, and that had a long history in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, stretching back to at least Nauvoo and maybe prior to that. And that identity was I was that was a very important part of my identity, was just understanding that this is my heritage. This is what I come from. This is part of, this is part of who I am. And I had two, my parents were, they divorced when I was 11, and they were not happy together, which is, I guess, why they divorced. But they, home life was kind of chaotic. Things felt unstable. And I relied in part on kind of going back to my relationship with my grandparents. And both of my grandfathers had really interesting relationships with the LDS Church. And my mom's dad was a banker and a business executive who was not LDS. His family had been, but then had a grandmother, I think, who left because of polygamy, and that's a whole amazing story. But my grandma was LDS and my mom was raised that way, and that was important to her. And he ended up being, he referred to himself as the token Gentile on several boards of directors that were mostly comprised of, there were either LDS companies like the Deseret News or things like, or the health insurance company. There were, where he was often the person who was, he was very trusted by high church authorities, and I knew that he palled around with them. So people that I was referring to as, elder or president or different things, he referred to by their first names. And so I knew that there was that connection. And then on the other side of my family, my dad's side, my grandpa had died when I was young, but almost became like, I think I was like 18 months old. But I was named after him. My middle name is Leroy, and Leroy Robertson is one of the most prominent names in the history of LDS music, and had a lot of even global success as a classical composer, and was the head of church music. And there's in the currently in the LDS hymnal, there's I think eight of his hymns are still in there. And he became almost like an imaginary friend to me, that was that I thought of as somebody who was kind of protecting me and watching over me, and that was an important part of my identity as well. I think I mentioned the my parents' divorce. I was a super anxious kid. I think I kind of probably would have been no matter what, just wired a little bit tight. And but then couple that with a chaotic home environment and a kind of fundamentalist religious upbringing. And that created this scenario where my relationship with religion was complicated even when I was young. I was very, very devoted, like my entire growing up years. No problem at all getting me to like read my scriptures and say my prayers. And I was, and I kind of, I was the kid who was really happy to get up and give a talk in church anytime. And spoke in a way, I kind of figured out early, like, this is how to present yourself. Part of that was very sincere and just a devoted place inside of me where I felt a sense of wonder at things like the gospel of the least of these. That was something that appealed to me from very, very early. And there's part of that that I still claim as being like, this is part of who I have always been, is that these things have always been important to me. And then I think there was another part of me that was just trying desperately to be good enough. And that if I checked enough boxes and worked hard enough, that it would somehow magically transform my home environment and everything would feel different. And it was easier, and I think this is pretty typical of kids in difficult home environments. It was easier for me to blame myself than to blame systems that were letting us down. And so that was all part of the mix. And on top of that, I was always getting lots of positive feedback about, like, oh, this look at, young brother Robertson, he's going to be a great leader in the church someday. And all of that, kind of built my self-esteem, but it was built on this thing that wasn't, that was me, but wasn't me. And so all of it was just complicated. And as I moved into my teen years, I feel like I was kind of casting about trying to figure out what I was going to do other than kind of be anxious and get bad grades. And I was taken on as a piano student by a really terrific pianist. And it was the first time that I'd been exposed to really high level music training. And so at age 14, I started taking these really serious piano lessons and then also started studying the bass at the same time. And both with really terrific teachers. And that music gave me this avenue where I found more community, I found a sense of belonging, and there was something more substantial that I was doing that was where I was really, developing a skill set. And that was something that I think really helped give me direction and in many ways kind of salvaged that part of my youth. And so there was never any question in my mind of whether I was going to serve an LDS mission when I got, past high school. I was always the president of every quorum I was in, and the, or at least, I mean, and they rotated kids through that stuff. But the, but anyway, I was deeply engaged. But like I said, it was a, it was a complicated relationship.
That is fascinating. And all this time you're in Utah, right?
Correct. Yep. Always in the same
Okay.
house, even.
Wow. Okay. So you've had this very in intense and convicted and committed relationship with your church, with what the Mormon faith calls you into. You've got a lot of positive affirmation through that and in the midst of difficult family life, and yet that commitment and faith continues to hold you and guide you, and you're in high school, and like you say, your whole life has led you to what comes next, which is college and a mission. So tell us, just take us through those next few years. You're still a teen for a couple years, and you're going to go on a mission. I can't wait to hear about it, and how your faith journey is unfolding during that next phase of your life.
Very good, of course. I think, and if you don't mind, Rob, it just occurs to me as we're talking, I want to mention really fast, and maybe this is the, the part of me that wants to take care of everybody and everything, but I do want to mention my parents are fabulous people. They're both amazing, and I think they found themselves in a very difficult circumstance. And so anyway, I just feel like I needed to put a bow on that. But anyway, as far as high school, it's like I graduated high school, and this was a time when there was this awkward kind of year pause usually before, because you would go on a mission at age 19, and so you graduated 18, and I spent, and so I left within about a year of high school graduation. But during that year, I lived with my grandmother, who was in her late 80s at the time. And she needed, it was helpful to her to have somebody living in her home. And she lived close to the University of Utah, where I, spent a year in school before I went on my mission. That was a neat experience. There were some great things about living with my grandmother. I don't know that I provided so much care as much as that it was just helpful to the family to have somebody that was there and could kind of keep an eye on things. And I do remember, this is a complete aside, I was dating a girl during that time. It was the first time I had dated really anybody. And she lived north of Salt Lake City, and we would always do dates in Salt Lake City. And eventually, rather than me driving back and forth to drop her off, she said, "Well, why don't I just drive down?" And she started doing that. That was scandalous to my grandmother, who was, raised in the early 1900s, and actually referred to her as a hussy because she came to pick me up at my house instead of vice versa. So anyway, that's I still look back on that and chuckle. But I got my mission call. I served a mission for 2 years in the southern part of Brazil, and I was in the states of Paraná and Santa Catarina. And it's a beautiful part of Brazil. I think every part of Brazil is beautiful. I really, as missions go, I feel like I had a decent experience. There were a lot of things that I loved about it. I feel like it's where I fell in love with teaching. And I started to notice some things that were like it just occurred to me when I was paired with a companion at one point that I just didn't get along with. And I was miserable most of the time. And we were working in a place where it's like the official missionary work was not going well. And the things just felt like slogging through mud all the time. And there were some Catholic families that just kind of, I would do community service, like going around giving free piano lessons or doing something like that. And there were families that got to know us and that would be like, please come over for dinner. And we would try to convert them, and they would just humor us. They were clearly just humoring us. And I think they were just trying to like give a meal and have a moment of connection with these kind of frazzled 19, 20-year-old boys. And I, even at the time, was like, wait a second, did God send me to them, or did God send them to me? And who's really doing the work right now? And the sense that I may not be the center, and that my church may not be the center of everything that is always happening, kind of started to creep in. I think even during those years. And so, but I did have, I loved Brazil. And when I got home, I pretty quickly met Heather. We were in the same ward. And which I think, I'm not sure if everybody speaks Mormon, that's the local congregation. And we dated for a couple of years, which is a really long Mormon courtship, but but she was really young, I was really young, and so anyway, we dated for a couple of years. And after we got married, I finished my work at the University of Utah, where I studied both music and human development. Those ended up being, and that's become thematic in my life, that these are two intense areas of interest for me. And so I studied as both in piano performance and bass performance, and then simultaneously was studying human development, which is what I eventually graduated in, but my transcripts look like I was a music major. And during that time, my younger brother came out as gay. And and this was in the early 90s, and he ended up moving into an apartment that was right above the apartment that Heather and I were living in. We spent a lot of time together, and what I saw in him did not match at all the narrative that I was hearing about gay people. And, which was along the lines of, this is a choice people are making. This is a this is driven by sin. This is all very kind of dark and terrible. And if they just tried harder, this would not be, this wouldn't be an issue. This is them not relying on God. This is, we've all heard all of the things. And I had a lot of dissonance creeping in about just the difference between what I was seeing in my brother and what I was hearing. So anyway, that's all kind of happening on the side. And then Heather and I, after I graduated, we moved to Boston. I went to a little school called Wheelock College that has since been kind of sucked into Boston University, but it was specialized in early childhood kind of training. And so I got a master's degree in child development, focusing on working with really young kids. I did some work in early intervention, which is kind of special ed for birth to three. And we ended up moving to Colorado, where I took a job directing a childcare center and immediately discovered that I had neither the training nor the aptitude to run a business, and that that was what that job was. And so that was kind of a miserable time. And during that time, it's like we're raising our first, beginning to raise our first child. Church ended up being a stabilizing influence throughout kind of other chaotic things that were going on. And so we were, very involved. Eventually I left that and said, I'm going to throw up my hands and say, forget all the things I'm interested in. I'm going to get a job where I sit in a cubicle and just do regular corporate-y things, which I did for about 15 years in mostly working in insurance, but then, also a bit in financial services. I think my final job, I worked for Target in a fulfillment center where I was, managing a team of people. I was never very, very good at any of that. I mean, I was okay, but I was kind of struggling my way to the middle. And it never felt incredibly fulfilling. I had one of the teachers that I work with recently at lunch, when he heard this part of my story, kind of shook his head and he was like, corporate Matt, I just can't see it. And it's like, yeah, no, that checks out. But because my work was so unstable, as far as like I was having such a hard time finding something I was good at and felt comfortable in and would be successful at, we ended up moving quite a bit. And it was usually sometimes, a lot of times within the same company, but it's like, but I would take different jobs within the same company and we would, we ended up moving around. And I think the most stability that we had during that time, we were in the Pacific Northwest, as I said, where we raised our kids. And we became very, very engaged in church at that point. We were in what was called the Fort Lewis Ward, and that supported the what became Joint Base Lewis-McChord. And we were there during the Second Iraq War. So during actually, yeah. Following 9/11, Iraq and Afghanistan, everything. So there were most of the men in our congregation were deployed. My son's scout leader died in action. There were we had a we were really immersed in this military environment and grew to just absolutely love these military families, and there was a lot of support needed. And then I'm the guy, of course, who's not getting deployed. And so I'm called on frequently to like go to people's homes and give priesthood blessings because I'm kind of, one of the few remaining men. And of course, it's only men who do that. And I was serving in the bishopric, as part of the leadership team for the congregation. And right about the time that I was getting ready to take another job with the same company, but that would have moved us back to Salt Lake. The bishop told me, "Hey, I'm about to be released, and just so you know, you're the next guy." And part of me was like, because I had this sense of my value being attached to my position in the church. And that as you kind of go to higher levels of leadership in the church, that that's indicative of both your value and your righteousness and your connection to God and all of those things. And there's a lot of talk of like that, you know, of course, that's not the case. That's not how that works. But then there's a lot of cultural things that really speak to that and that reinforce that concept. And so I simultaneously felt relieved, but also like, oh, I'm missing, kind of missing my shot here. And, but we moved back to Utah. I had at this point my youngest brother, who was born in my from my mom's second marriage, he came out as gay. He was pretty obviously gay from the time he was about three, and in a really super delightful way, although he had a really rough childhood in the context that he was raised in, partly as a result of that. And but I keep getting exposed to people who are different and whose narrative doesn't match the narrative that I feel like I've been given. And I feel like that challenged my faith over and over and over again. And so I'm still like desperately trying to cling to and go deeper into Mormonism, and at the same time feel like I'm getting drawn out with things that just didn't make so much sense to me. It's like the gay couple that adopted a child when we were living in Washington and that were our neighbors, John and Tom, absolutely amazing people. They adopted this child who was in really difficult circumstances, and they're raising this son. And I'm like, this is one of the most beautiful, purely Christian things I have ever seen. And it is so pure and so lovely. And what they're doing is making society better. And my church is really threatened by this, is and much more so than it's not just about gay people, it's that the gay people who are healthy are somehow, and who are happy and who are secure, somehow seem to be much more threatening than gay people who are in crisis. And so I feel like I over decades did this very slow process of deconstruction, and it was all happening internally. And I felt like if I said anything, like we have all three kids by this point, I felt like if I said anything, that it would blow up our family. And the few things that I did say, like I mentioned at one point to Heather, said she was something about gay rights had come up or something. And I said, well, I kind of feel like the way that the church has dealt with where they had to in 1978 say, well, we're actually extending the priesthood to every worthy male and not excluding black people, that I said, I think that's going to happen for gay people someday. I think the writing's on the wall. And that was, she was absolutely flabbergasted. We have this huge discussion that was, I was like, I can't bring up that kind of stuff. That's not, and I felt like the church was working for everyone else in my family, for all three kids, for Heather. I'm like, I'm not going to blow this up. So things became progressively more kind of tense for me, and at the same time, on the exterior, everything looked utterly normal. And then I think in about when would it have been, about 2013, 2014, that all just exploded when our youngest came out to me. And I'm actually filming this from the room where this happened. And that is one of the most sacred and fragile and devastating moments that I've ever been involved in. And devastating not because I was devastated by that news. I wasn't surprised. It wasn't, and I felt, and I didn't have any worries about that at this point. What was devastating was how scared he was. And he knew that I would be supportive, and he was still terrified. And so I will just forever remember the way that he was looking at his feet as he told me. And I, in that moment, knew that church was over for me. And it wasn't over for him yet, and it wasn't really over for me as far as what I was, my actions, but internally it was done. And I wanted nothing more than to just scoop him up and say, no, we're taking you out of this. This is not, you will not be in this place where you are a second-class citizen and where you are seen as anything other than beautiful and whole and wonderful. And we're just not doing that. And it's more complicated than that in the moment because Heather is extremely devout. I've in discussions since that time, Heather has said like that my instinct that if I said, hey, this isn't for me, I'm stepping away, that if during those years, which was, the whole decade prior, if I had said something, she's like, oh no, that checks out. That would have ended our marriage. No question. And then our son came out and said, please don't tell mom. I'll tell her when I'm ready. But Heather is a very sensitive person. She's very smart. And it was also not exactly subtle that there was stuff going on. And I remember she and I went on a walk where she said, we're in a pretty good place right now. And she and I had not always, we had like any marriage, we had our ups and downs. And said, we're in a pretty good place right now. I wonder if we should divorce now while we're in a good place, because then we can work on co-parenting. We can try to figure out how we're going to do this because I think Luca came out to you. I think that's what's going on. You are going to want to support him in leaving the church, and I am going to want him to stay. And that is going to eventually cause tons of conflict between us. It's going to create chaos in our home. And I wonder if we should just, if this would be the healthiest thing for us to do. And at the same time, Heather is she is a person of tremendous integrity. And sometimes integrity in a fundamentalist religious context is only equated with obedience. It's only equated with loyalty. And Heather's integrity is the kind that goes to the core of her, where it is more equated with being willing to really look at things and to say what she sees and to admit what she is encountering. And so she was going through a lot of turmoil. She's feeling like she's about to lose her family and had visions of she was going to be the lone person living by herself in some squalid little apartment somewhere, and that the kids would be with me and nobody would like her, but she would be kind of doing that for the faith and that that would be the right thing to do. And this was, this was a picture that Fear was painting for her, and not anything that was, that was anywhere remotely near coming to pass. And she started digging into, she's like, if I'm going to make that kind of sacrifice, I need to really know what's going on here. And she started listening to podcasts that had stories of LDS people who came out as gay, bi, lesbian, transgender, and just started listening to their stories. And she did that obsessively for I think it was about a week. And at one point I said to Heather, I said, I feel like my deconstruction process was a crock pot and yours was a microwave. And she said it wasn't a microwave, it was a volcano. And within a week, Heather is still actively engaged with the LDS Church. She serves in her Relief Society presidency, which is in the women's organization, but her feelings about the church are quite different. And she, within a week, just said, oh, the church is wrong about this. They're not just. It's this isn't just a difference of opinion. This isn't the world versus God. This isn't any of these things. They're just wrong. And so that was about, yeah, like I said, 2013, 2014, around that time. And over this last decade and more, I think everything in our family has just transformed, where I think we always showed up for each other, but I think that I've come to feel that you actually become a parent, that I became a parent for each of my children truly when they were willing to show me something about themselves that was outside of the narrative that I was painting for them. And that in those moments when my children have said to me, no, actually, this is who I am. And where that is welcomed, and where that is not, and where that's celebrated, it's like that's where parenting lives. And for Heather too, Heather has like shown me parts of herself that I had never known and never understood. And same with me, with her, that we're just operating in a different place as a family. And I, during all of that time, eventually I was serving as the primary chorister. I work with music and kids and all this stuff. And so I was leading the music in for the primary children. And I finally just called the bishop and said, I can't do this anymore. My playlist is getting way too short. I can do the song about I'm trying to be like Jesus, and I can do the song about I'll walk with you, which is about like people who have differences. I will be with you, kind of a thing. I can do those songs and kind of the pretty one about nature, and I can do a few of those, but I just can't teach any of the other songs. I can't teach the songs that are telling the children follow the prophet. If there was a song that said, check out what the prophet says and evaluate it carefully against your own feelings against your own thoughts and feelings and where God is leading you, and let that be one of the voices you consider, that'd be a terrible song. But if there, but if there was, I was like, I could do that, but I can't do the song that just repeats, follow the prophet, follow the prophet, follow the prophet. And so I'm stepping away, and to their credit, I have been quite fortunate to all of the church leadership locally that I have run into since that time have actually been incredibly respectful. And Heather stayed. I basically at this time I'm deconstructing to the point that saying, I'm an atheist. I don't believe anything at all. And a humanist and all of this, and I'm just going to be with people. This is what that's about for me. And Heather's showing up at church every week and crying through most of it, and hearing things that she really struggles with. And we have been on these two journeys where, as far as what we believe and what we feel, we're actually very similar. And how we've decided to act those things out is different. Where Heather has, like I said, she's in the Relief Society presidency in this little ward that is kind of falling apart because it's a part of town where there's just not that many members. And but Heather knows every elderly person in the ward, and she's like, I need to do this because a lot of, there's people on who are on Meals on Wheels, and who knows what's going to happen with all of the government support people are getting. And I feel like people are in this kind of fragile and insecure place, and I need to know who everybody is so that I can help take care of my neighbors if something comes up. I need to know my neighbors. I need to know kind of what they're dealing with. And I want to be a voice for people at church who, when something harmful is said and they feel too vulnerable or insecure or scared to say, ow, that hurt, that doesn't feel right, I can say it because I don't care if they kick me out. And that is how, and that's how Heather shows up. And meanwhile, I'm, off doing my atheist humanist thing, which honestly was an important part of my journey. And then I'm happy to share, I don't know if this is a good point to pause for a second, but then I'm happy to share how I came to Community of Christ.
Yeah, let's just take a little pause here because this next chapter of life, Matt, that you've shared, this is a lot. This is a lot of stuff. And it's layered. Your own personal sense and awareness of God and how your experience in life with real people isn't matching the narrative that you're hearing in your faith community. And you and Heather having a really beautiful relationship through it all, acknowledging bumps along the way, but having the essence of who you are with each other holds you two together as you journey the way together. And then having kids come out is that's hard. That is really hard. I remember when our youngest daughter came out to me, and what I felt in that moment echoed some of what I heard you saying. And that is, there was never a moment of question in my mind that I did not accept and love her as she was. But there was this just heart-wrenching moment of realization of the pain and fear that she had carried for who knows how long. And that's a crumbling experience. And so many things that you have shared in your story are words of prophetic truth that I think are just so powerful. And I just want to affirm that the beauty and essence of who you are as a human being shines through your story. And wow, that's a lot. But just so lovely because I'm hearing that through all of that, which is incredibly difficult inner work and relationship work and all of that, how your family has united. It's always stayed connected to one another in relationship. Like at the beginning when you said, we love us, we love who we are together, that gosh, that speaks volumes.
Hey, Project Zion podcast listeners, this is Blake Smith. You've been listening to an episode of Fair Trade with host Robin Linkhart and guest Matt Robertson. There's just so much good information in this conversation between Robin and Matt that we thought we'd take a pause and pick up with part two next time on Fair Trade and Project Zion.